Audio version of Michael Leitman's blog. August 20th, 2020. Medium published my new article, COVID-19 has quenched the flickering candle of higher education. COVID-19 has crippled every conceivable aspect of civilization. Yet, some aspects suffered such a blow that in all likelihood, we are witnessing their premortem spasms. One such aspect is higher education. After decades of accelerated ethical and political decadence, and voluntary discarding of academic integrity in pursuit of wealthy donors, all that remains of the ivory tower is an empty shell. Now, thankfully, social distancing has puffed away that, too, exposing what was once the zenith of human engagements as the nadir of human indulgence. Today's employers attribute much greater weight to candidates' professional experience and independent learning skills than to their academic background. In that regard, a study that surveyed over 3,000 U.S. teens and adults found that half of young Americans think that their degree is irrelevant to their work. When Plato founded the academy, he encouraged diversity of perspectives and discussion of alternative views. Being a participant in the academy did not require adherence to Platonic orthodoxy. What a stark contradiction this is from today's blatant political agenda that every academic institution advocates. If you can tell what political views students of a certain academic institution will have at graduation, this takes away even the pretense of academic or intellectual integrity. Worse, when every student is indoctrinated according to the institution where he or she studies, the more institutions you can buy into promoting your ideas, the more you will control the leadership of the country in a few years when the graduates stake their places in the country's corporate world and political leadership. When universities began to develop in Europe in the early Middle Ages, they started as monastic, or cathedral, schools that focused on religious studies, as well as liberal arts, grammar, logic, and rhetoric, music, arithmetic, geometry and astronomy. As in ancient Greece, their focus was on development of thought, but also on provision of knowledge. In the Middle, and especially the late Middle Ages, universities began to emerge as independent institutions in Italy, England, France, and elsewhere in Europe. By the time of the Renaissance, there were fully developed academic institutions, and many of them were funded by the monarch rather than by the church. Yet, in doing so, they also lost their academic independence. To maintain the favor of the benefactor, academic institutions had to bend science to meet the views of their sponsors, and objectivity flew out the window. While it is possible to accept partiality when it comes to humanities, it is far less acceptable when concerning hard sciences, and it is downright detrimental when it comes to medical studies and other fields of research that concern human lives and people's health and well-being. Over the past few decades, there have been numerous cases where medical research was distorted, and medical evidence concealed in order to meet the interest of the funder, often causing horrific consequences to numerous people. The thalidomide distribution scandal of the late 1950s and early 1960s, for example, left a lasting effect on the world. Released as a sedative drug in the late 1950s, thalidomide was also found to ease the effects of morning sickness in pregnant women. The drug was sold over the counter for 5 years before it was discovered that it could interfere with developing fetuses and cause death and horrible birth defects. During those 5 years, more than 10,000 children were affected, some 40% of whom died, and the rest were born with abnormalities to the arms and legs, as well as other parts of the body. And worst of all, at least in Britain, the company that distributed and sold thalidomide knew almost 6 months before it was pulled from the market that there were credible claims it caused terrible deformities and the deaths of infants. Since the 1960s, the situation has only gotten worse. When even medicine is for sale, anything is for sale. Today's universities are mostly funded privately, or rely heavily on private donors to secure their budgets. These sums are not pro bono. They carry a very clear and high price tag, which the university agrees to pay when it decides to accept money from individuals, corporations, or foreign governments. These donors often get to determine much of the curriculum, the lecturers, and even some of the public statements that the university makes on issues of interest to the donors. In fact, these are not donations, it is quid pro quo. But fortunately, times are changing thanks to the coronavirus. COVID-19 has uncovered the worst of the medical community, exposing nearly every official medical personality as a promoter of the financial or political interest that he or she supports. The views among so-called experts concerning the nature of the virus and the ways to deal with it are so conflicting that it has become clear that none of them can be trusted to speak with the public interest in mind. In that state, the public cannot know the truth about the virus because either no one knows it but will not admit it, or no one tells the truth because it does not promote his or her vested interest. Even more importantly, the transformation that the job market has been going through since the turn of the century has made universities almost superfluous. Today, when you study computer science, for example, by the time you graduate, at least half of what you learned in the first year has been changed and your knowledge has become irrelevant. Today's employers attribute much greater weight to candidates' professional experience and independent learning skills than to their academic background. In that regard, a study that surveyed over 3,000 US teens and adults found that half of young Americans think that their degree is irrelevant to their work. It is not that young adults do not need to learn. They need to learn and they learn a lot, but not in universities. They find that dedicated, professional trainings in their field are far more relevant, affordable, and effective. They get what they need from these short, usually online courses, which make them more professional in their fields and do not leave them in debt for decades to come, and with heaps of irrelevant knowledge. When COVID-19 forced social distancing on the whole country, it shut down the universities. Thankfully, this coming fall, hundreds of them will not reopen but will continue teaching online. In doing so, it takes away the little appeal that universities had, the campus atmosphere. I think it is time to move to the next phase in learning. There is no point funding behemoth institutions that do not benefit the public. Medical research institutions should be funded solely by the government so as to maintain objectivity and their ability to focus on the public benefit and not on catering to various vested interests. Social sciences and humanities should not be regarded as sciences, since they are not. Those who want to study them should be able to do so. But institutions should openly profess what ideology they are endorsing so that when people study there, they will know what will be their views when they come out. Additionally, people who listen to a graduate from this or that institution will know what to expect and will not be misled into thinking that that person presents objectively researched information. It is a long overdue cleanup of the academia, and the coronavirus expedited it. In the near future, I believe that higher education will take on a completely new and much healthier form. The era of the last generation. The state of the last generation is a shift to a new form of social organization, where we gradually learn how to work correctly with our ego and come to sensing an integral connection between us. Today, we are in a transition phase that lets us realize the corruptness of our attitudes toward our social and natural environments and start rebuilding ourselves to fit the whole, complete, and caring structure of nature. Therefore, the main value of tomorrow is our ability to mutually support and take care of each other. Medium published my new article Desperate for an Economy of Sharing. Despite the insistence to keep the economy running, it's grinding to a halt. The US economy shrank at a dizzying 33% annual rate in the April to June quarter, by far the worst quarterly plunge ever, wrote Time magazine. In the near future, people will realize that only the well-being of society guarantees the well-being of the individual within it. There are consequences to a slowdown. According to Bloomberg, a special project by the Census Bureau has set out to map and measure all the anxieties that COVID-19 has brought in its wake. And the findings are alarming. Almost a third of people in some states have little or no confidence they can pay August's rent or mortgage. Almost 127 million Americans experienced a loss of income since mid-March, and millions were forced out of work dealing with the pandemic. Worse yet, people's health was adversely affected by the virus, even if they didn't catch it. In fact, in addition to high levels of anxiety and depression that the virus stirred, 71 million adults did not get medical care that they needed for a condition unrelated to COVID-19, between mid-June and mid-July. We're clearly at a crossroads. Eventually, the government, any government that is elected, will have to make the necessary changes to secure people's well-being. Otherwise, the chaos we are already seeing in some cities will spread throughout the country. Although a pandemic is troublesome enough, COVID-19 is much more than that. The transformations it is imposing on us are not merely measures to curb its spreading, they are revolutionizing our entire civilization. The job losses we have experienced until now will dwarf compared to the job market that we will see in the near future. In fact, we are racing toward a reality where not working is the norm and working is the exception. In such circumstances, relief for packages will not do. We will need a deep change in our perception of the concepts of work and society. Only essential jobs will remain. Production of food, clothing, housing, healthcare, education, and other basics are necessary. But even here, automation and robotics will shrink the number of workers. In such a state, it will be impossible to maintain the existing model of salaries to those who work, and a few months of benefits for the unemployed. You can't have the majority of the nation living on food stamps and in affordable, low-income housing. Therefore, we need to establish a two-arm program where one arm adapts the economy to the evolving circumstances, and the other adapts the society to those same evolving circumstances. The economy arm will reshape production so that monopolies cannot exploit their power and people can afford to buy everything they need to support a modest but reasonable standard of living. If the society arm works correctly, there will be no need for austerity measures of any kind. Everyone will have a decent life, and the country's budget will be balanced. People's income will come either from jobs or from the federal or state governments, a bit like today's public sector employees. However, these people will not work in public service jobs, but in building a completely new society, since the current structure of society is the cause of the crisis. The economy is a reflection of the society we live in. The current society fosters excessive consumption, unbridled competition, cruelness, and apathy to the plights of others. These, in turn, create depression, violence, substance abuse, suicide, homicide, bullying, racism, eating disorders, numerous mental health issues, sexual, physical, and emotional abuse, and any form of conceivable misery. The task of the society arm of the program will be to create solidarity, mutual responsibility, and care among all people. As a result, the economy will become an economy of sharing. In such an economy, the role of production is not to further pad the already bloated bank accounts of companies' shareholders. The redesigned economy produces only what is needed, and with an added goal to bring people closer together. Whether one works in manufacturing or provides services, the salaries will be similar and the goal the same: to increase social cohesion and solidarity. To foster such a society, people will need to understand the shift that the world is taking and participate in it of their own volition. To facilitate this understanding, governments will provide mandatory courses that will show how we are becoming an interdependent society where our lives depend on the lives of everyone else, similar to the way we must keep social distancing in order not to infect other people. Until today, society consisted of individuals who tried to exploit others for their own needs without any accountability. However, that model has failed and exhausted itself. In the near future, people will realize that only the well-being of society guarantees the well-being of the individual within it. Therefore, people will learn to care for society so that it will care for them. The sooner we realize that this is where we're going, the better and easier it will be for all of us. My new article on San Diego Jewish World Pandemic ended our childhoods. Patach Tikva, Israel, we can get all teary-eyed over it, but it won't help. The world we knew until the beginning of this year is over and will not return. And with it, it took our childhood. Until COVID-19, we were like kids wrecking up the house doing whatever they want while the parents are out on business. But COVID showed us that they're not gone, they're just invisible. And instead of showing up and yelling at us, they sent an invisible force with the odd name, SARS-CoV-2, aka, the novel coronavirus, which sent us home and told us to stay home. And every time we come out, it returns and lands another blow until we learn we must obey. We don't like it, we want to get rid of it. But we are gradually realizing that we can't, and probably will never be able to, at least until we do what it tells us, stay apart and stop infecting one another. We already know that COVID-19 is affecting our brains, but what we haven't realized is that it is affecting our hearts. It will change our hearts from alienation to connection. For now, it only increases our loneliness, but at some point, we will realize that to connect and not be lonely, we have to connect in our hearts before we connect in our bodies. Only then we will overcome seclusion, the negative influence we have projected on each other will be reversed, and this will be our healing. The virus has come to teach us how to be grown-ups, responsible for our common home, and accountable to one another. It has come to turn us from unruly children into caring adults, who tend to one another and to the world around them. Just as children do not notice as they grow until they are already adults, we will see what we have become only after the fact. And probably, only then will we be thankful to the virus, without which we wouldn't be able to disconnect from our previous, infantile, and destructive little selves, and become mature, responsible, and caring humanity. Michael Leitman, on Quora, is there a learning from the global corona pandemic that we all are missing? We should learn that the coronavirus is not merely a blow to our health and the economy, but it emerged in order to completely transform our lives. On one hand, many understand that there is a major transition unfolding. On the other hand, we mostly wish to revive our pre-coronavirus lifestyles as soon as we discover a remedy for the disease. We thus need to elevate our awareness to see that nature is acting on us via this pandemic in order to increase our understanding and feeling of why it is happening. That is, the coronavirus did not appear to merely shut us off from each other in our respective homes, and to keep a distance of a few feet from each other when we have to go outside, and also not to stop us from attending public events, and so on. It surfaced in order to nudge us toward understanding our interdependence and interconnectedness, and to adjust our relations accordingly in order to live with more mutual responsibility and consideration toward one another. The longer the pandemic dwells among us, the more it serves to gradually establish a new, more integral and global sensation. Other than the blow itself, which does the work of teaching us about our interdependence against our will, I also very much hope that we will succeed in raising our awareness willingly, through education. In other words, instead of merely reacting to a problem that suddenly reveals itself before our very eyes, we can learn about the greater revolutionary process we are in, and see how we live in a global and integral nature, acting to ultimately raise us to a harmonious state of perfect connection among each other and with nature. By understanding this bigger picture, we can then view the coronavirus pandemic as a tough lesson that nature is teaching us, in a very calculated way. Similar to how we educate children, if they willingly listen to our advice, then we relate favorably to them, and they spare themselves from various deviations. However, if they do not listen to our advice, then in order to save them from greater impending blows that we can foresee, we have to act more strictly and sternly toward them. This is why I, my students and my organization invest so much in explaining the root cause of the pandemic, and how we need to use this situation in order to readjust our approach to life. That is, by learning about how nature operates on us, we can enter into balance with nature quicker, experiencing much healthier and happier lives, on one hand, and also saving ourselves from more intense future suffering. We would thus be wise to accept the coronavirus as a warning from nature, using it to become more like nature. That is, as nature is interdependent and interconnected, so we should realize our interdependence as parts of nature positively by increasing our mutual responsibility and consideration toward each other. Ultimately, there is no pandemic or virus here, but a single force pressuring us, out of necessity. It has no desire to burden us, but like a loving parent witnessing his or her child straying to a negative course, it needs to act more aggressively in order for us to notice what it wants from us. One way or another, we will need to develop and become more positively connected. The question is whether we do so harmoniously by activating our minds and hearts to positively connect with others, and by reorganizing our lives so that we supply each other with the essentials we all need, or on the contrary, that we let nature's steamroller of evolution continue catching up to us, goading us from behind to wake us up through painful circumstances. Medium published my new article, America: Either Everyone Succeeds Together, or No One Will Succeed. A few weeks ago, I warned that the spreading unruliness and violence were only going to worsen unless they were treated correctly. After some of the countrywide George Floyd protests became violent, came more localized incidents, but they were just as disconcerting. The Seattle Capitol Hill occupied protest, CHOP, the Portland unending riots, the Chicago rampage on the city's magnificent mile upscale section of Michigan Avenue, and the rising tsunami of gunshot victims in New York that has already claimed nearly 1,100 lives this year alone are all symptoms of the same ailment: alienation and disconnection. The next president will have his hands full, and I don't envy his position. We don't have to like those who are opposite from us, but we do have to acknowledge, value, and maintain all sides and facets of the nation. Without even one of them, the country will crumble. In many respects, America is already in a state of civil war. But without borders between North and South, without clear ideologies that one can choose besides a penchant for anarchy, it is hard to determine who is fighting whom. Therefore, for now, it looks more like chaos than war, but it is very painful nonetheless. I don't think that there can be a quick fix to the situation in America, but there is certainly a solution. The only question is how fast and after how many needless victims the American people will opt for it. The solution is simple: Americans must find a way to live together. In the past, the relationships between blacks and whites, Democrats and Republicans, or conservatives and progressives were not as tense and full of hate as they are today. Of course, American history is rife with bigotry and violence on a racial background. However, it seems as though this time, it is happening all over the country, at the same time, and with added tensions and frustrations accumulated over decades of neglect. So although there has always been racism in America, this time, it seems like another facet of a generally disintegrated society that is coming apart at the seams makes the situation much more perilous. I don't know by whom and I don't know how this can be done, but I know that as always, so now, the solution to America's problems is not in dealing with each problem separately. The solution can only come through mutual responsibility, when each resident is guaranteed a sufficient and dignified standard of living, above which it will be possible to develop national consciousness that is stronger than one's personal view on the sensitive issues that are tearing the country to pieces. It will not come in a day, and it will not come without a learning curve, but there is no choice. Either everyone succeeds together, or no one will succeed. In today's reality, interdependence is a given. No one can survive alone, and it is only the complementary nature of civilization that enables it to continue. If we try to eliminate the diversity and go solo, we are dooming ourselves. Everything in reality has its opposite. If it didn't, we wouldn't be able to know about it, since we notice anything only on the backdrop of its opposite. The idea that eliminating the people or ideas we don't like will improve our situation is a figment of our self-centered imagination. But it is a very dangerous one, since should we succeed, we would eliminate ourselves along with the target of our hate. If we want to grow, we can do so only by examining ourselves against those with whom we disagree or of whom we disapprove. As much as we may dislike them, we are totally dependent on them. Understanding and accepting this truth is vital for our survival in the interconnected society that we have become. We don't have to like those who are opposite from us, but we do have to acknowledge, value, and maintain all sides and facets of the nation. Without even one of them, the country will crumble. Michael Leitman, on Quora: what are the businesses of the future? We first need to understand that the financial, industrial and educational systems we have lived according to until today will change completely. It is because the basis upon which we built all of our systems was our egoistic human nature, that is, personal benefit at the expense of others. The more we develop with egoistic motives underlying our systems, the more corruption, exploitation, manipulation and abuse fills these systems, which gradually leads to a multi-system collapse. Our past egoistic notion of success, where an individual or company is considered successful if they manage to run other individuals and companies to the ground, while simultaneously shining the spotlight on their increasing profit margins, is revealing itself to be unsustainable and harmful. Today, nature presents us with increasingly interdependent and interconnected conditions, where we can no longer think of ourselves as separate from others, considering our own benefit alone. Therefore, increasing profit in one person's hands as a result of subtracting from other people can no longer work as a success indicator. Moreover, it is important for us to understand that the end of our egoistic materialistic paradigm has been greatly accelerated by the coronavirus, which has forced us to distance ourselves from our past systems in a very poignant manner. Today, we already live in a new system, but we have yet to fully acknowledge what that means. Thus, we are far from sensing our current transitional era positively. The key for adapting to our new era is to start emphasizing the importance of human connections above all other engagements. If we succeed in upgrading human connections, so that we will feel mutual consideration and responsibility toward each other, then we will discover exactly what kinds of businesses we will and will not need. In short, businesses will need to be conducive to improving human connections. On one hand, we will need our life's essentials met, and on the other hand, we will need to continually invest in building positive connections among society. All other surplus will be thus seen as non-essential and even destructive to our world, and the coronavirus has already helped us see this a lot quicker. The principle of future businesses should be fundamentally opposite from today's principle, that they benefit people's connection, and that they cause no harm to people and nature. There should be no more situations where one person or company increases their profits at the expense of others. Our priorities will need to shift completely in order that we all focus on benefiting everybody. Success will then be seen not in terms of profiting from society, but in terms of contributing to society, and businesses that sustain the goal of benefiting society will be the ones that prosper. Peculiarities of our time. Question. The history of human development is the history of the development of our desires. About 3,500 years ago, the level of basic animalistic desires began to develop for food, sex, and family. For 4,000 years until the 5th century CE Common Era, the desire for wealth became dominant in humanity. From the 5th to the 15th century it was the desire for power. From the 15th to the 20th century it was the desire for knowledge. And since the end of the 20th and beginning of the 21st century it is the desire to reveal the meaning of life and realize yourself precisely at this degree of the pyramid. What is the peculiarity of our time? What does it mean to realize oneself at the last degree, in the spiritual? Answer, the fact is that our desires develop gradually, according to special laws. The highest degree is the one we are on today. It is really the highest. Egoism pushes a person to realize himself in equivalence of form with the Creator, to become like the Creator. On the other hand, the absolute impossibility of achieving this is revealed in us. And here we come to the conclusion that the task of becoming like the Creator is not solved directly, head-on, but develops and is realized in a different way. Everyone should receive the forces from nature that help him change himself and build a structure above himself called man, Adam, like the Creator, Adam. After all, we are animals in all our ordinary pursuits. And where does the man we need to develop hide in us? Very deeply. It is just a small desire that has been developing in us, for centuries, until in our time we begin to feel it. And its realization comes in a very interesting way. We should not develop our original egoistic nature, but change it to the opposite, altruistic one. This is the equivalence of form with the Creator. If you want to be human, you must turn yourself inside out, renounce animal existence and human predilections. Renounce all current values, such as wealth, power, fame, and knowledge, and prefer only one thing to this, the study of the Creator and the equivalence of form to Him. From CapTV's Management Skills June 25, 2020. The decline of the empire of egoism. We do not understand where our freedom of choice is or how to achieve it and implement it so as not to harm other people because we are all connected. Look at the turmoil in America today, it is a real civil war. There are demonstrations in Israel too, and the same things will happen more and more all over the world because the situation will get worse. The world is losing its egoistic ties that it was connected by. You give to me and I to give you, commodity money, commodity money. This was a system we lived in for thousands of years until we totally squeezed all the juice out of it. By the 50s of the last century, this system reached its heyday and then began to rot. This was inevitable because otherwise we would never come to spiritual correction. And therefore, today we find ourselves in a world that reveals such problems that will not allow it to return back to its previous state. Financial and governmental minds are trying to figure out how to maintain the existing systems where there was balance between how much a person invests and how much he can get or buy. This egoistic system was relatively balanced, and everyone understood that this was life. Suddenly it crumbled in an instant. No one knows how to fix it or what will happen to us, in the future. We find ourselves in a situation where the former mechanism has stopped working. Egoism, the driving force, kept me in confrontation with others all the time, determined how much each one would give, how much he would receive, and bound us, with egoistic relations. But this connection no longer works. What will regulate our relationships? We have created an army, police, an education system, culture, and financial systems. Our egoism pushed us to build an egoistic society, which has suddenly stopped working. This is a crisis that is not equal to any other previous crisis in history. It seemed to us that we achieved an excellent organization of human society, which corresponds to our egoistic nature. We got the opportunity to travel, see the world, and understand each other because everyone was driven by one desire to gain more. It would seem, what are we missing? There is only one thing we lack, that by this we do not implement the purpose of creation. And look what has happened, how the Creator has ruined all our plans for a good life with the help of the coronavirus. Now we have found that all our preparations for a good life do not help us, not a single egoistic system works. So what can you do? The only way is to move from an egoistic system to an altruistic one. After all, why can't we move on to another even more egoistic system if the previous one has stopped working? But the point is that there is an upper program that rules us. From our level, we are not able to appreciate it, but Kabbalists explain how to use it. If we accept it, then we will be able to move forward, and if not, then we will remain at the previous stage until this program forces us to move forward. At the end of correction, the system will work from both sides, both from the side of great egoism and from the side of great bestowal. These two forces will work against each other, and the created being, in the middle between them, will use both of them in an integral, harmonious, and perfect form. From the second part of the Daily Kabbalah Lesson, July 28, 2020, Writings of Balha Sulam, The Freedom. New Life 1266. How to Get Rid of Stress.
Shalom lachem. Toda shetem mitzarfim elenu.
Hello, and thanks for joining us on the New Life Show with Dr. Micah Beitman. Hello, Dr. Lightman. Hello, everyone. Hello, Yael. Hello. And today we'd like to talk about how to deal with paralyzing pressure in times of pandemics. These are very non-simple times. We'd like to understand a bit better how can we go through this period and reach a new and better life. Be with us, Yael, please. Yael. Yeah, this is a period that causes people to feel very stressed. As a part of my work, I meet many people, and I see it practically happening in front of my very eyes. Some people, it really takes them apart. We're pressured by many factors. There is the health issues, economic issues. Socially wise, we see that something's going on. In short, there is a general distress, unrest, and our ship is really in stormy seas, and we have no idea how to bring things back into balance under the effect of this very powerful thing that's going on. I hear people talking about a historic change, tectonic plates moving beneath the surface, that things are really shaking up everything that people had up until now. And this has very severe implications. And today we'd like to ask for your help to understand how can we, with the help of the wisdom of Kabbalah, find a calmer place from where we can look at things, where we could look at what's going on in reality in a bit more rational way. We know that there are many methods that try to calm people down, whether we're talking about drugs, sedatives, or if we're talking about different techniques like sports, exercising, guided imagination, and so on. And today we'd like to focus on the wisdom of Kabbalah as a method that can help a person find balance in this very stormy situation. So a basic question, why are we so restless? What's the cause? Dr. Lightman, I think that our work, our problem, is that we have no idea what we're facing. For the past dozens of years, we said that we are in a new era. We liked calling it a new world, new times, new generation. We gave the new generation different names in order to show that, yeah, we are already there. But we're not. We have no idea what does it mean to be in a new era, in a new generation. And so what follows is that for dozens of years we resisted change. And the change is happening now. And now that it's happening in a way that compels us, forces us. It's not that we're moving along with the changes, but we're continuing to resist the changes. We don't understand them. And these changes forcefully enter, like water. Probably you saw what happens in a tsunami, how water forcefully enters the city, the streets, and everything. This is what's happening now. Because nonetheless, we're not ready, we're not prepared, we're incapable of digesting what is going on. And therefore, this is a new era, and let's not say that we're ready, but it's dozens of years that it's going on now, it's on the way, and we simply pushed it away, postponed these changes, and really we started postponing it from the beginning of the 20th century, since the times of Bala Sulam, where he said that we're already in the times of the Messiah. Meaning a force of nature that pulls us to a new level, to a new life, to a new way of seeing reality. All of these things are completely new. We're not ready for all of this. And somehow, we not only have to be ready for this, but also to help it happen, so that somehow the transition will be acceptable. So what's happening today, I'm not considering this a crisis. We're in it for a long time now, only that now we're starting to really experience it in practice. On the flesh, so to speak. There's a tsunami, and it's not like we're standing from afar, and yeah, look at the waves and the ocean, but that it's coming closer, we're saying, God help us, it's death. Yeah. And the reason due to which it causes so much pressure is only because of the economic issues, social, health issues, or is there something beyond that, or is it all of it together? How do you see this? Why are people under such stress and pressure? Dr. Lightman, people can't digest this. Again, look at the parallel example at the example with the tsunami. People were standing on the seashore enjoying the waves in the ocean. They didn't understand these waves because really these waves and the depth of the ocean, they weren't that high because it's deep. But once these waves come closer to the shore, the waves rise and you see that it's a wall of tens of meters and you can't run away anymore. Yeah, so we're afraid of what? That we feel that something is coming our way. And Dr. Lightman, now we see that there's a problem up ahead. But still, some of us see the problem. And some say, meh, it's pretty, it's nice, it's nothing. Let's eat and drink because tomorrow we die. And if we don't die, then, you know, let's not think about this too much. And all of this is because for many, many years, in recent years, we didn't want to listen. That there is a tsunami headed our way. Oh, and what kind of tsunami is it? What kind of change is this? that something was supposed to happen and we pushed it away and it's coming now. What does the tsunami want to change? Dr. Leitman, our attitude towards society and the world is everything, that society is uniform, humanity all in all, is a very weak creation that covers only the crust of our planet and just a bit of it. So to understand, digest this and understand that we have to be connected, that we have to better understand and treat nature more subtly, nature that is enabling us to exist. And not that we disregard and destroy everything so crudely. Then, of course, we'll not be able to survive. Owen, so the change that is about to happen and was supposed to start decades ago, it's an eco-change, and it's man's attitude toward ecology. Dr. Leitman, ecology isn't only the vegetative and the animate and the still that we're destroying. Ecology is also that we're destroying human society, that we're using our ego so excessively, and the results from the still vegetative and animate that we're destroying in our environment, it's all coming together. We have to understand that we can no longer exist the way we did. We have to change our nature. Humanity has to reach a state where it cares for everything and not that it uses everything however which way it wants. Yeah, in nature, there are many violent eruptions in nature and many changes. But if we look at the animal world, for example, animals don't feel stress. You know, everyone goes their own way. Things happen as they do. And there isn't something that really impairs their ability to function in the animate world. Dr. Leitman, besides man, when man goes and destroys them, this is already a disaster, but they themselves, they only keep the balance between them. Owen, in terms of the stress that animals feel, we now, human beings, feel tremendous stress, so much that it paralyzes us and can really impair a person's health, Dr. Leitman, because we have caused this entire system to completely fall out of balance, Owen, and then this accumulative pressure falls on my head. So I recently feel that I'm on the verge of a heart attack almost constantly. Would you connect me to AKG? You'd see that I'm really on high RPM. Now, in nature, when there's a disaster, how do animals react to this? Dr. Leitman, the way I see and feel animals, I see that they're really suffering greatly, because they actually feel that their world, that they feel it on the animate level, meaning through all the cells of their body. An animal feels that it's living in its world, the good, the bad forces, everything, but he lives in harmony. An animal lives in harmony with it all, and suddenly it feels that it is about to completely be destroyed. And that wise man, out of his wisdom that's supposed to facilitate the entire system not to fall out of balance, is the one that causes complete disbalance. Yael, people feel pressured. Is that the right place for them to be? This is the question. Eventually, there is a certain state where if you feel no pressure, you don't move, you do nothing. If you feel too much stress and pressure, you can't function. Sometimes you don't even hear or see anything due to the inner overload that you're experiencing. And the question is, what is the right amount of pressure that a person has to be under. Dr. Leitman, here there really has to be a worldwide educational system, because we're advancing, and that's for sure, toward a state where people will start going crazy. Really going crazy. Losing their nerve in a way that who's going to keep the nuclear weapons for someone not to, you know, fire a missile. You know, people like having the suitcase next to the American president, Russian president, that only a few people can push the button. You know what we depend on? On the nerves of several people. And if there is serious pressure, who knows what might happen? Sure, we can say one way or another, everything is in the hands of heavens, besides the fear of heavens. Yael, and in relation to an ordinary person, what is the right amount of pressure that a person should be under in order for him, on the one hand, not to say, everything's fine and won't move at all, and on the other hand, that he won't be too pressured in order for him to be able to function and think rationally? Dr. Leitman, I think that just as we talked about this in the past dozens of years, we have to continue. Nothing will help humanity besides a method, an educational method. We have to publicize this new kind of education, how to prepare a person for this new form of life. Were we not to give a child education, were we not to educate him in kindergarten, school, university, different places, and then he goes to work in different places? Were a child not given this, it would have been a savage, unfit for life. This is what we need. Everything depends on education, on preparing humanity, not just one single person or even a single nation, because today we see how we're all interconnected. We have to educate humanity, teach them about this new state, this new degree that all of us, the entire planet, is entering. Oh, and so, you're saying that this new knowledge that a person will acquire, it will give a person, it will decrease the paralyzing pressure that a person feels, will allow his heart to calm down, and will give them the ability to grasp things in a new way. So the means that you believe in that will bring down the paralyzing pressure is giving a person new knowledge, information. Dr. Leitman, this is what we start with. Until this knowledge starts working in him, like with a child that you explain to him, you play with him, so it will enter him in different ways, and then by that he reaches inner changes. Yael, according to the wisdom of Kabbalah, could there be a serious storm on the outside, and on the inside a person will feel calm? Dr. Leitman, he won't feel that there's a storm outside. I don't feel that there's a storm outside. When I hear you, then yes, I'm included with what you feel. I dress in you, suppose. I understand that you, from what I know, you're working with in prisons and different places, and therefore you have a general feeling of the public that is in a kind of impaired state, especially in this new era. I myself don't see it, meaning I can see it, but I can't really dress in the public. First of all, I'm disconnected from the public. Secondly, I see where it's leading the public. Where is it taking everyone? And therefore, I no longer feel the blow as a blow, like a person that, what's going to happen? And he's standing in the middle of the street crying like a little child left alone at home. I see the process. I see the direction. And I also see the result. So you can't compare what I feel and what a person, an ordinary person off the street feels. Yael, and according to the wisdom of Kabbalah, what advice can you give a person, an ordinary person who didn't choose to study the wisdom of Kabbalah, but he does appreciate the wisdom? What can you offer him today in order to help him calm this severe tension that he is experiencing? Like we said, that people can go crazy. Dr. Lightman, besides the correct perspective of where is the current state situation taking us, I have nothing to give, but that helps. It'll help him in everything. Yael, it will give him a sense of confidence. Dr. Lightman, confidence, correct participation, support, supporting everyone and for everyone to support him. Sure. Owen, some people say that if you want to feel less stress, stop listening to the news. I know people that simply stop listening to the news. It's not that they don't know that now there's quarantine or that you have to wear a mask. They're aware of that. But beyond the instructions given to the public, they simply do not listen to the news. What do you think about this approach? Because I'm kind of critical about it. Seems to me kind of... Oh, doesn't matter. Doesn't matter. What do you think? Dr. Lightman, such a person, one way or another, is detached from life. The big, necessary, real things. He has to hear them. I remember my teacher, next to which I was for many years and for many hours every day. He used to listen to the news. Suppose we went someplace. He says, soon there's news. I'll put on the radio, turn on the radio. I turned it on. He'd listen for a minute or a minute and a half, the first minute and a half, then turn it off. Oh, and so you're not in favor of disconnecting in order to decrease the pressure, Dr. Lightman. No, that's not treatment. By that, I'm disconnected from the public, from the people, from the world. It's as though I was given some kind of sedative and sleeping pill. Oh, and sometimes the pressure that we feel, that really is even sometimes on the level of hysteria. We see that our family feels it too, even our children. In the reality that is going on around us today, how can we calm the children down a bit, Dr. Lightman? Through knowledge, there too, you have no choice. They're living in a new generation. These are souls that are ready to accept this information. Owen, what should I tell them? Dr. Lightman, that all this is coming to us in order for us to connect, and that by the force of connection that we will generate between us, we will be able to overcome all troubles and problems. And really, according to the plan of nature, this is what we have to do. Nature wants for us to be connected as one man and one heart. Yael, and this will calm us down. People that will work to the favor of connection will be more calm. Dr. Lightman, of course. Of course. Yael, so our viewers, or we, what can we do in order to really, what can we really do in order to start connecting more? Dr. Lightman, this is what we did. At least for the past 20 years. At least, even 30 years. The method of correction. Method of correction of humanity. This is what we need to keep on publicizing today. And again, to get everything that we have, even from the past, Owen, in terms of a viewer that's listening, that's not going to publicize anything to anyone, maybe to his children, he's going to tell them something because it's a very pressuring situation. Today, children, they changed. This period really changes children. It's not simple to sit at home for so long, and even if you go someplace, it's only once in a while with masks, limitations. Their world really changed completely. They're very social creatures. They used to play all day long with their friends, and you don't have that. And suddenly everything changed from one end to the other. Children feel stressed. They're fed up with all of this. They want for this to end already. They can't hear the word corona anymore, and they're already tired of it. And it really hurts them mentally. So if previously you said that what I have to explain to my children, that all of this is happening in order for us to connect, to feel closer to each other, give me some practical tip that I can recommend to my child in relation to his friends so that they can start working on their connection. He plays with his friends, but today it's even limited. It's limited. And practical tip, Dr. Lightman, through computer games, every house has a computer. Every child has a computer. All the more, please bring him all his games, and if you don't have such games, make such games so that they can work on their connection. Owen, what do you mean, games that work on connection? Dr. Lightman, that through these games, they will see what does it mean to be connected, how good it is, that it brings balance, calms things down. Owen, and the definition of being connected, what does that mean? Is there something new here in the type of connection between people? Dr. Lightman, to be connected to others, it means that I feel the other, and the other feels me, and both of us feel each other, and we're thinking similarly, and we feel similarly, and that between us there's connection. Owen, are we advancing toward a new kind of connection that we weren't familiar with up until now? Dr. Lightman, of course, because today reality is forcing us to be engaged in this. Owen, so what do we have to innovate in this regard? Dr. Lightman, that we're building a new reality in which we're connected. Owen, why, if we will build a reality in which we will feel more connected, will it calm each of us down? Dr. Lightman, it will calm all of nature down. Oh, and why, Dr. Lightman? Because that's what's missing. By our connection, we start suiting nature. We become compatible with the global and integral nature, where all of us start existing in a single mechanism, in a single system. We don't want to touch anything in nature. We don't want to harm people. We don't want to be against something, but in favor of. As a result of our growing connection, we want to come to an integral world where everything's interconnected, where everything's functioning only according to connection. Owen. Thank you very much, Dr. Lightman. What is your hope for this period, Dr. Lightman? You know me. Owen, you hope that what will happen, Dr. Lightman, that people will hear, will listen, and will take it with them on their journey. Owen, thank you very much, Dr. Lightman. Thank you, Yael. Thank you for being with us. Till next time, all the best.
the ladder of spiritual ascent. There is a ladder of spiritual ascent at the top of which is the light. The first level descends from this light and is divided into two parts, upper and lower, 1A, 1B. The second stage is 2A, to B. The third is 3A, 3B, etc. The light enters the first level only when the level wants that, but it cannot receive the light because if it wants to receive it only for its own sake, the light will not enter it. So it can receive it only to the extent that it bestows unto the light. This means that there is the desire of the light and the desire of the created being. How can I reach the state in which I will want to bestow, know what I am living for, and what I can bestow to the Creator? In order to do so, I need to feel the lower level. If I turn to it, I will receive from it a desire to connect to the light and I will transmit it upward. This transmission of a foreign desire, which means that it is not my desire, indicates that I don't want to receive the light for my own sake, egoistically, but in order to transmit it to others. In such a state I will not receive it. We are actually connected in a special spiral where each one exists in order to pass something on to others, and so the light passes through us, fills everyone, and no one is an obstacle that stands in the way of the light. So the connection between us is the precondition for the flow of the upper light inside us, until we reach the state of total eternity and we are completely filled. We actually need to be connected this way, and in order to do so there is the commandment of love thy friend as thyself, because in such a case we reach the state of infinite filling by the upper light, which means, by the Creator, and thus enable him to exist inside us. From Cab TV's Fundamentals of Kabbalah, September 16, 2018. Health and Medicine, Part 2. What does human health depend on? Question: there are two types of impact of society on a person. The first is an indirect, unconscious impact. For example, pollution of the atmosphere, water, genetic experiments that are carried out on animals for food, etc. All of this naturally affects us. The second is the direct, conscious impact of society, the media, all kinds of economic levers, and social norms. Do you think human health in most cases depends more on society or does it depend on genetics? Answer: health depends on both. Mostly, no doubt, from genetics. But still, as they say, existence determines consciousness. Therefore, it is imperative to think about what kind of environment we give a person, although in the same environment there are people who tolerate it relatively well and there are those who perish. Remark: doctors say that human health depends 10% on health care, 20% on heredity, another 20% on the environment, that is, from the activities of people. And 50% is determined by a person's lifestyle. And the way of life is dictated by the media and by the historical period in which a person lives. That is, in principle, we can say that 80% of health still depends on society. My comment: of course, life expectancy and its quality depend on the relationship between people, on their communication. From Cab TV's The Post-Coronavirus Era, May 14, 2020.